All lines now bridged.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone, and welcome to our first virtual meeting of the Health Information Technology Advisory Committee. I want to thank everyone for your time here today. This is Lauren Ritchie, and I will open the meeting to order, starting with roll call of our members. Michael Adcock, are you on the line? Christina Carabello.
Good morning, this is Christina.
Good morning.
Tina Esposito.
Present.
Cynthia Fisher.
Yes, good morning.
Brad Gescheider.
Good morning.
Morning. Valerie Gray. I believe she will be absent. Anil Jain.
Yes, good morning.
Morning. John Kansky.
Yes, I'm here.
Ken Kawamoto.
Present.
Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Morning. Leslie Leonard. Leslie. Arian Mellick.
Good morning.
Jenny McComb.
Present.
Clem McDonald. Clem. Aaron Meary.
Good morning.
Brett Oliver.
Yes, good morning.
Terry O'Malley.
Here.
Carolyn Peterson.
Good morning.
Raj.
Good morning. Here.
Steve Reedy. Steve, no. Patrick Soon-Chong.
Good morning.
Good morning. Sasha Termat.
Good morning.
Good morning. Andrew Trescott. Andrew? Cheryl Turney?
Cheryl's here. Good morning.
Robert Waugh? I believe he will be absent. And Denise Webb?
Present.
And for our federal representative, do we have Chesley Richards on the line?
Here.
Kate Goodrich?
Here.
Lauren Thompson?
Yes, I'm here.
And Ram Shkaram. Okay, we may have to circle back later to confirm if other members have joined a little bit later, but with that, I would like to introduce and turn it over to Dr. John White, our Deputy National Coordinator, for opening remarks.
All right, thank you so much, Lauren. Welcome, everybody. On behalf of the good Dr. Ruckert and all of my colleagues at ONC, I want to welcome you back. Glad you came back. And I want to thank you again for your service. Once again, running through the list of folks that are members of this advisory committee, I am, astounded and humbled. You are extremely talented and important people, and I am incredibly grateful for the time and service that you're given to this. It is challenging work, but it is important work on behalf of the American people. So we're incredibly grateful for your service here. Thank you very much. It also struck me that at the last meeting, I did not have an opportunity to introduce myself. So just very briefly, I'm the Deputy National Coordinator at ONC. I am a family physician by training and have been with the U.S. government since 2004, I guess, first working at AHRQ and then at ONC, and have worked with several of you over many years, and I'm looking forward to working with those of you that I haven't had an opportunity to work with before. So thank you so much again for all the time and effort that you're putting into this. You are coming to us at a critical time. The first year or two of the new administration is always very exciting. People are kind of figuring out, you know, who's who and, you know, what's going on. But you have joined us to give us your advice at a really important time. For the past year, we've been working hard on starting to implement the provisions of the 21st Century Cures Act, which, of course, authorizes this committee. And things are really starting to fire on all cylinders. I will say that across the administration, the level of collaboration and coordination is very high, from the Executive Office of the President to Health and Human Services to Department of Defense to Veterans Administration. There is broad and deep recognition that the work that we are about here is really important and it's vital for the American healthcare delivery system to work well. And honestly, we need to be coordinated with the private sector. I've got great colleagues here in the administration. I'm incredibly grateful for Kate and Chesley and Lauren and Rom and their colleagues. We can't do this stuff without them, but we also can't do this without you. So we're all in this to serve the public. So we are going to be, I don't know about you guys, but the Olympics has been on every night in my house, and I was trying to think of a good analogy. It's a bobsled race, right? We have all been pushing. I think we're your brakemen, right? And we have been charging as hard as we can, and we have jumped in the sled, and you guys are going to kind of pilot us down through these kind of sharp turns, we're looking for record time here. So thank you very much again for what you're doing for us. I want to thank Dr. Stead for coming to join us today. Carolyn is going to run through the agenda, so I don't want to do it too much in advance. But for those of you that have not met Bill Stead before, he is a wonderful colleague of longstanding. He's the chair of the National Committee for Vital and Health Statistics, and honestly, he's quite brilliant. So I'm looking forward to having him join us today. Last thing I want to do is to take an opportunity to introduce you to and thank some members of the committee that are committing themselves to even more time and effort by serving you as your co-chairs, both for the broad committee as well as some of our task forces. So appreciate everybody's interest and willingness to, who is interested in doing this and being willing to serve. But I want to introduce Dr. Robert Waugh and Carolyn Peterson as your co-chairs for the HITAC. And I also want to be able to introduce, we're going to have two task forces, which I think were described to you at our last meeting, our Trusted Exchange Framework Task Force, which will be co-chaired by Denise Webb and Arian Malk, as well as our U.S. Core Data Interoperability Task Force, which will be co-chaired by Christina Carabello and Terry O'Malley. So thank you all very much. I know at least Arianne knows how much effort goes into this. But again, with such great people, I'm really looking forward to seeing the outputs of this. So with that, I'm going to stop. Thank you very much for your time. And I'm looking forward to hearing the discussion today. So I think I'm going to turn it over at this point to Carolyn, since as Robert put it, the air gods were not smiling upon him today, and he may be listening in the air somewhere, but he's not going to be able to talk. So, Carolyn, the floor is yours.
Thanks, John. Thanks for the warm welcome, and let me add my welcome, everyone. It's great to see us all here on this early, cold winter morning. We have a really good agenda today, some good reports. I will let you know Robert is listening in on the call, and we welcome him over the Atlantic and look forward to his chairship at the next meeting. So I'll go through the agenda very briefly to get us started. We're first going to go through an approval of the minutes, a quick vote from our January meeting, and then Bill Stead and Rashida Dorsey will give us a presentation on the National Committee on Vital Health Statistics Committee and Work Plan Overview. A little later, I'll do a review of the HITAC policy framework and a schedule review for us, and we'll vote on the policy framework. Lauren will call a break for us, and then we will have task force reports from Denise and Arian on the Trusted Exchange Framework, and from Christina and Terry on the U.S. Core Data Interoperability Task Force. We'll have a time for public comments, and then we'll wrap up the meeting. So with that, I think we will welcome Bill Stead and Rashida to the floor to take over the presentation on the NCVHS work plan overview.
Good morning. I'm Bill Stead, and I'm from Vanderbilt University Medical Center, and I'm chair of the National Committee. I'm joined by my colleagues on this call, Alex Goss from Imprado, who is co-chair of the Standards Subcommittee, and Rashida Dorsey, who is Executive Staff Director of the Committee, and Rebecca Hines, who's Executive Secretary of the Committee. Next slide. We are grateful for the chance to meet with you virtually and to briefly overview the committee's mission and focus. We will describe the way we, our areas of standard privacy, confidentiality, security, and pop health, and provide a very brief overview of our work plan in the areas that we think will most closely touch on your work, to set the stage for a discussion of how we can collaborate. With that, Rashida, do you want to describe the committee?
Absolutely. Good morning, everyone. Next slide. NCVHS is HHS's statutory public advisory body on health data, statistics, and national health information policy. The primary audience of the committee is the HHS secretary, to whom recommendations are submitted. As a FACA, the NCVHS works in partnership with the private sector, other advisory bodies, and HHS, providing a collaborative forum for stakeholders to contribute observations and recommendations to the policymaking process. Next slide, please. The committee's 18 members have diverse backgrounds: public health, vitals, statistics, social sciences, privacy, ethics, law, healthcare, information technology, administrative, and clinical standards. We hold in-person meetings of the full committee 3 times a year, generally at the Humphrey Building, and in addition convene public hearings, workshops, roundtables to support development of recommendations. Our findings and recommendations to the secretary reflect interdisciplinary consensus, and generally the committee's recommendations fall into 2 buckets. The first addresses timely issues for which policy changes are needed, and the second identifies opportunities from a longer-term perspective, offering a vision that takes into account significant trends and anticipated shifts in the health arena. Next slide, please. The members have staggered terms. As you can see here, we have quite a diverse membership from backgrounds and also location and fields. We are currently in the process of filling 4 vacancies. Next slide, please. The NCVHS website has background information on the committee, meeting information, as well as letters to the secretary, reports, and tools developed by the committee. Remote access to the meetings and meeting materials is also available via the website. I now turn the presentation back to Bill. Next slide.
Thank you, Rashida. This is a list of some of our recent reports and recommendations, and I'll draw your attention to 3 working up from the bottom of the slide. We commented on the ONC draft 2017 interoperability standards advisory, specifically commenting on standards for birth, death, and fetal reporting. And then Section 1104 of the Affordable Care Act stipulated that the Secretary establish a review committee to evaluate existing healthcare administrative transactions for which standards, code sets, identifiers, or operating rules have already been adopted to determine if they are meeting industry need and to ensure coordination as appropriate in developing recommendations with standards that support the certified electronic health record technology approved by ONC. So this is one of our interconnection points. The secretary designated NCVHS as the review committee, and we issued our first report and set of recommendations in 2016. And then Public Law 104-191 stipulated that NCVHS report to Congress on the implementation of the administrative simplification provisions of HIPAA, and we submitted our 12th report to Congress last spring. Next slide, please. The committee organizes its work through three standing subcommittees on standards, population health, and privacy, confidentiality, and security. With 18 members and a real breadth of potential issues on which to focus, it's the most important, efficient way to divide up our work. Although each of the subcommittees does the heavy lifting, it brings the results of its efforts back to the full committee for discussion, and the actual products are voted on and approved by the full committee, not the subcommittees. So which lets us tackle cross-cutting challenges as a committee of the whole. Next slide, please. We have 8 active projects in flight across the 3 subcommittees, with another 9 currently in the parking lot waiting for bandwidth to free up. I will provide more detail on the first 5 of these, the predictability roadmap, the Chief Information Officer Forum, our health terminology and vocabulary work, and are looking at information privacy and security beyond HIPAA and the Next Generation Vital Statistics Project. I think those are the ones that intersect most with the things HITECH is going to be considering. We also have active work underway trying to look at the broad health data ecosystem and the intersection of that with the Commission on Evidence-Based Policy making. Next slide. We're watching and providing advice to CMS on the Medicare card replacement that takes place April 1 and the collaboration that is the subject of this call. Next slide, please. So the predictability roadmap, and Alex may want to provide color commentary as I go through this, over several years, as we've worked with the industry, we've had a steady drumbeat of testimony that there's not a predictable way to plan for changes in the standards and operating rules. And so we are in the process of trying to figure out how we might provide more predictable planning so that the industry could really plan for where resources are going to be needed and to coordinate that planning across what are currently relatively independent regulatory requirements. Next slide, please. It's a challenge, as the people on this call will know, because on one hand, we need more flexibility, we need to be more predictable, and we need more rapid update to meet the business needs of the industry. So those dimensions conflict to a bit. So we're in the process of trying to identify actionable short-term improvements that could be made, and then longer-term term opportunities. In spring of 2017, we developed a comprehensive grid of the methods by which each of the standard development organizations and the operating rule authoring entity conduct their updates. We held a design workshop in August where we brought together those organizations plus industry stakeholders to discuss and identify challenges and opportunities. And next slide, please. We're in the process of developing recommendations and getting input from the industry on those recommendations. Do you want to add additional color commentary, Alex, or is that okay from your perch?
Fabulous job. Thank you, Bill.
The next slide. The CIO Forum is a one-day forum that I believe is now going to be on May 17, where we are going to solicit input from a diverse group of chief information officers who are the end users, if you will, of the standards and operating rules. We want to harness their vision for what predictable updates to the technology and to the related standards and operating rules might look like, what from that implementation perspective would be the ideal schedule for updates, and what improvements would they propose into the way the standards are adopted and updated to deal with the changing business climate. Next slide. We're in the process of identifying and inviting the positions to join us for the May 17 meeting. We hope to use this as a way to get that input incorporated into the predictability roadmap. Next slide. Third project I'll mention is around health terminologies and vocabulary. The NCVHS charter calls for the committee to study the issues related to adoption of uniform data standards for patient medical record information. Further, the committee is to advise the department on health data collection needs and strategies and review and monitor the department's data and information systems to identify needs, opportunities, and problems. NCVHS last really looked broadly at health terminology and vocabulary back in 2003. Now that we are through the transition to ICD-10 and ICD-10 PCS, we decided it was time to step back and take a fresh look. Next slide. Next slide, please. Oopsie, we've gone the wrong way. Keep going. One more. Keep going here. Keep going. One more. Sorry, I was looking at my notes, not at the screen. The National Library of Medicine is staffing this work. Potential recommendations might include criteria for adoption of named code sets, more agile approaches to governance, coordination, maintenance, and dissemination of code set standards, and strategies for adoption that align with the standards predictability roadmap and with ONC's health IT strategic plan. So we think this may be another point of intersection. Next slide, please. The next project I'll mention is the Health Information Privacy and Security Beyond HIPAA. We're basically assuming that the HIPAA framework itself is unlikely to change, and that given the the nature of the changing environment in terms of both health and the breadth of health and in terms of technology, that we need to identify other potential levers that might work in conjunction with HEPA to better preserve privacy, confidentiality, and security while addressing the opportunity to use data to advance advance health. And we are hoping that we can come up with recommendations that will be helpful not just to the secretary, but also to health data stewards. Next slide. We have, this is obviously a huge space, and we've decided that the place to start is looking at a couple of areas where data that are protected health information when in the hands of a covered entity, but are not maintained by covered entities or business associates. So as data moves back and forth, if you will, across that regulated, unregulated boundary. And so we're going to work two use cases, and the first one we're working are clinical data registries, where those registries receive data from covered entities that is protected in the covered entity's hands, but those registries are maintained by entities that are not covered entities. Use that as one of our boundary conditions. The second use case will be consumer devices. We're hoping to work our way through them and issue recommendations related to what we hear by the end of the calendar year. Next slide, please. The final project I'll mention is the Next Generation Vital Statistic project. The current vital statistics system is a federated and vulnerable network of jurisdictional data capture components, and the question is how we might make that much more robust while still maintaining its essential federated nature, and that will get into birth, death, and various population and public health data. Next slide, please. We held a two-day hearing in September. The report of that hearing will soon be released, and we're now in the process of developing initial recommendations that will be included in a letter to the secretary. Next slide, please. So with that background, what we would like to do with the rest of our time is to explore approaches to collaborating and understand the how we can best support the Office of the National Coordinator and HITECH. What role can we play that would be useful in the short term as you're moving through this very aggressive schedule? Geneva Morris is going to brief NCVHS on HITECH at our May 15 face-to-face full committee meeting, if you will, in exchange from this briefing to you. And we have also initiated direct communication between the standards subcommittee and the ONC technical team. The committee plans to provide comments on the USCDI and the proposed expansion process in the next few weeks. So with that, Rebecca or Alex, any additional commentary, or should we go into question-answer discussion mode.
I think it would be great to hear from the members. I noticed in the chat box that there are some thoughts already percolating around how we might share NCBHS approaches over the last year and how that might help, you know, HITACH get going on some of your very fast turnaround time projects.
Sounds good to me, Bill.
Okay.
And this is Lauren from ONC. Just in absence of our tent card during our in-person meeting, we'll ask the members to use the hand-raising function in the upper left panel of the Adobe Connect system, and Carolyn will call on you.
I see Leslie with a hand up. Why don't we start there, and I'll start the list. Go ahead, Leslie Leonard, ask your question.
Okay, maybe we can come back to Leslie.
Okay, how about Stephen Lane?
Good morning, thank you. That was a very nice presentation. Thank you very much for that. I was particularly struck by the work that you're doing on the predictability roadmap. I have the opportunity to serve on the USCDI work group that's going to be starting its work here soon. And I think some of what we're going to be tackling is this notion of how to create predictability for the industry, for developers, for clinicians, et cetera. So I'm interested in learning more from your group about how you approach that and what you find working well. And it would seem that if our groups could have similar methodologies, that would make it even more predictable for the industry.
Alex, would you like to field that?
Sure. Thank you, Bill. The predictability roadmap for me is something that is long overdue. We need to enable business to innovate and move at the speed that they need to accomplish their business models while providing the interoperable infrastructure for information exchange, whether it's clinical, administrative, or financial. And I do think that to Stephen's point that there is a privacy aspect related to that. And so the beyond HIPAA and some of the ongoing work of our privacy, confidentiality, and security committees, which one of your fellow members, Jackie Munson, is a member of, is really integral work. And so we do tie those aspects together as a full committee. The predictability roadmap effort is focused currently around the administrative simplification provisions as well as the ACA-related provisions. So it covers X12, NCPDP, NACHA for the electronic funds transfer exchange, as well as CAQH CORE's operating rules. And what we're finding is that the different perspectives of end users, whether they're the end developers, need to be balanced in the overall set of themes that we evolve into recommendations. So the CIO forum is really about elevating that day-to-day end user's perspective. We've already garnered the input from the various players, from standards development organizations and operating rule authoring entities to the federal rulemaking process. And so we're hoping that the work that we're going to complete this spring will enable us to actually produce detailed recommendations for more public vetting before they're brought to the full committee for finalization. The data harmonization aspect is really at the crux of a lot of the issues that our two federal advisory committees will need to tackle, and our health terminologies and vocabularies work is another big piece of this. So I think it's going to be very interesting as our full committee evolves our feedback on USCDI, then how our standards subcommittee and HITACH can work maybe at a more detailed level to address the administrative, financial, and the clinical data content needs as we move forward, because that's really the underpinning of interoperability. Stephen, did you have any more questions in your comment that you'd like me to address?
No, that was very helpful. I look forward to the chance to work together. And Jackie Munson and I are joined at the hip, and we'll definitely collaborate on our thoughts around the privacy issues.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, let's go back to a question from Leslie Leonard.
Hi, folks. Thank you. Apologize for the difficulty getting on. And just want to thank Bill for a fabulous presentation on what NCDHS has been doing in it, and the long history of this committee and its support of health data needs for the country. I just want to emphasize what a critical role the committee plays in linking what the nation does to do health and trying to create an integrated system that looks at public health data surveys such as NHANES, BFRSS, public health data sets like MIPS, public health data systems such as we discussed for death mortality, and then our new clinical data sources, and trying to work that into an integrated system is an enormous challenge, and one that I believe should have the highest priority. In addition, it looks like NCDHS is hitting on some of the key issues for the 21st Century Cures Act with the links between HIPAA and non-covered entity organizations and the notion of citizen science, and how when something's downloaded to your cell phone, it really moves outside of HIPAA. I think that the idea of updating HIPAA for the 21st Century Cures and for data science-driven precision medicine is also incredibly important, and an area where we should definitely overlap. Last, I'd like to say that the issues of how we create useful data sets for both public health and healthcare organizations that include data on the environment that patients are in, both social and the exposome, as far as environmental resources, and it's an incredibly important area where geolinkage is really the tool by which environmental and social determinants data are linked with EHR data, and that there needs to be discussions on how to do that in better and more precise ways, and where data sets need to be expanded in terms of scope and the quality, that is to say the size of the geo region that they address. So for example, where do we need more environmental health sensors to really be able to drive improvements in health based on improving air quality?
Thank you, Les. Very helpful comments. One aspect of the health terminology and vocabulary work is really looking at how the scope of the existing terminologies and vocabularies needs to be expanded to deal with health as we really now understand it in terms of the many dimensions you mentioned. So thank you.
Okay, and let's take a comment from Clint McDonald.
Sam, are you on the line?
I think I am.
Yes,
you can't hear me? You can't
hear
me? Okay. So what I wanted to ask about the issue of timeliness, because in many discussions I've heard kind of two directions of the timeliness in terms of, say, intervals of dispensing code systems. And specifically, some of the hospitals institutions don't want more frequent because they have enough trouble digesting the 6-monthly one. So I was wondering which direction you were hearing, Bill, about what they kind of want. Someone want faster, some want slower, or is everyone faster?
No, I think you're right, Clem. And what they really want is predictability and predictability across the things that are changing for them. That needs to be faster than the changes that take decades to take place. But, it's probably more in the once or twice a year range. Some might even still be more like two-year range. This is one of the pieces we hope to really shed light on through the CIO forum.
Okay, and then one other dimension is that people talk about terminology and vocabulary, but looking at the data, the coding systems that I know about across the spectrum, they usually aren't just simply word lists, and I don't know whether that's a misconception because they often have attributes attached that are of some importance. And I just want to make sure that people are realizing these are often pointing to a database with other attributes in them.
Very good point. The way UMLS makes many of those connections has emerged as a very important piece of the thinking moving forward. How do we coordinate the development of the individual terminology sets? And I think you're right, they're more knowledge bases or databases than they are lists. And how does that integrate into dissemination approaches such as UMLS?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Bill, we might want to let them know that NLM has actually reached out to NCVHS to help them think about how to expand it to include some of these population health domains that really aren't well represented in UMLS.
Good point, Rebecca.
So we have that sort of, it's just a concept right now, but that's a project the committee is going to be working with NLM on in the coming year.
Bill, this is Alex. I'd like to add to the first part of the question that Clem asked about the frequency aspect. One of the things that has been very clear to me is needing to find a predictable approach that enables the install base to garner the efficiencies but not preclude innovators from wanting to try new versions or new methodologies for the information exchange. So it's going to be an interesting evolution over the next 6 months or so to figure out what that sweet spot is, because we know that people can do yearly updates to fee schedules and code sets. We know that we want to establish an effective floor, but we have to take into account the diversity of the businesses that actually use the standards and operating rules and find a way to get that right balance between garnering administrative simplification, cost savings, but still letting the market advance so we can get to the point of focusing more on how we're using the data to improve health as opposed to just trying to get the data across the wires when we really need it.
Good point, Alex, and I'll just build that out a little bit. The discussion has been along the lines of could we have a floor which was advanced in a predictable way that in essence required everybody to come to a common point in a predictable fashion and yet use modern versioning techniques to allow willing partners to be several versions, if you will, ahead of that floor where it is in their interest to do so. So that a way that both could work together, which we think would be necessary to get predictability and agility.
Well, thanks, Clem. Let's move on to a question from Terry O'Malley.
Hi, thanks. And Bill, this was a great presentation. So there's no question that there's huge overlap between NCVHS and USCDI. And I don't know what the acronym is going to be for that collaboration. But the question I have for, I guess it's for you and also for the committee and our ONC helpers, and it's how are there limits on how the two committees can interact within sort of the FACA, and is public comment a sufficient venue for the collaboration that I see ahead?
I will provide a non-expert answer and then let Rashida or Rebecca or the ONC counterparts give more expert answer. I think that what we're hoping to do, for example, with the advice we're going to give on USCDI, we will actually provide those comments as a committee, and it's my understanding that that can be brought into your process, and that that's not quite the same as public comment, but I'll let the experts flesh that out.
Hi, yes, this is Rashida, and I would say, yes, that there will be opportunities for the NCVHS to provide substantive feedback on issues that this FACA is working on and ways for more formal collaboration. We would certainly do this through the public process, and so you know, anything that we submit would the NCVHS would submit would certainly go through the due process. So as we identify areas of further collaboration, I think we would scope out what those different contributions would look like and the best approach to do it.
Great. Thank you both.
And this is Rebecca. To let you know, we have, meaning NCVHS, have started to develop a table that outlines these areas that Bill started with, and then understanding what you and Ankh are doing to actually identify what the areas are, and then as Rashida laid out, we can then come up with the how. But first we have to figure out the what. So once we figure out what the specific areas of collaboration are, we can define the process.
Thanks, Rashida. Denise, you have your hand up. Go ahead.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. I participate in the Karen Alliance, which is a multi-stakeholder alliance focused on advancing consumer-directed exchange and an individual's right of access to their health information under HIPAA. And the alliance members are concerned about and have discussed consumer protection outside of HIPAA. So I have a question. Can you elaborate on how the beyond HIPAA use case related to consumer devices is within the jurisdiction of your committee to address versus the FTC? Just wondering about that.
I'll take a crack at that, and then let others say. So NCVHS does not regulate. NCVHS convenes and develops recommendations, which are for the secretary on one hand and for others, but many of them are also applicable to other stakeholders in the industry. So so as we have done the environmental scan for beyond HIPAA, and that has now been released, so it is on our website. We commissioned a rather thorough environmental scan that is sort of the background for this work, and you might find that interesting. The We're responsible for in essence recognizing trends and making recommendations related to those trends. We are aware of what FCC has done, and they are one of the existing sets of levers. So our roles are very different. Does that address your question?
Yes, that's helpful. I know that probably the work of our committees does absolutely inform other agencies that can then take what we've learned and done to possibly affect some regulation. Thank you.
Neil, if I may chime in. Hi, Denise. It's Alex, a long time no. We see each other since our HIE days. I think that it sounds to me like the Karen Alliance would be a great asset to add to our list of testifiers and informers as we continue to look at the broad issue around beyond HIPAA. So we'll certainly add them to the list.
That would be great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We have one last question from Raj.
Good morning, everybody. This is Raj Ratwani from MedStar Health. I have a kind of a general question for you. So as we look at the data that we're able to glean from various health IT and EHRs, the quality of the data is often driven by how it's being input into the system. And that naturally brings a lot of questions around the usability and the user interface that our clinicians and others are interacting with. I was wondering if you can comment on whether you see that as a concern. So, you know, one of the things that we see, for example, is that if you have a confusing display, information that could be in structured data fields or discrete data gets inputted elsewhere and becomes more difficult to analyze and extract information from because it goes in an unstructured place. So is that a concern, and is that an area that you're currently looking at or in contact with other groups about?
It is very much a concern. It is not an area that NCVHS has delved into recently. The place that it has surfaced in our work is in the Next Generation Vitals project, because the quality of the data there is very problematic, partly because of the diverse group of people that capture data, particularly death data, and no real certification or common training. So it's more than just a user interface issue, but it is. That's where we've seen this, but there's no question that that usability and contextual awareness will be very critical in the work that you are getting ready to do.
Thanks, Bill and Rashida and Alex. Seeing that we have no more questions, I want to express our thanks for your excellent presentation and share that we look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
We are now going to loop back and approve the minutes from our January meeting. ONC sent that out to us in batch 3 just a few minutes ago over email. Those minutes are also in our committee portal for our review. And since we've all had them, I'm wondering if I can have a motion to approve those minutes.
Motion.
And is there a second?
Second.
Second.
And can we now have a voice vote, please, on the minutes? All in favor of approving, please say aye.
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 Anyone opposed to approving, please say nay. Okay, Lauren, it sounds like we're in good shape with the minutes approved.
Great. Thank you, Carolyn.
Okay. We will now head into a presentation on the HITECH policy framework and schedule. I want to remind everyone also that this is a public meeting and it is being recorded. The chat may also be public, so please do take that into consideration as you share your comments. We'll start into the policy framework now. I'll handle the presentation since Robert is still in flight. If we could have the next slide, please. So this is the language that lays out the framework and the underpinning of what we'll be doing with this committee. We've seen this before, and I won't read through it again for you, but it is in the slides for our future reference. Next slide, please. So HITECH is here to recommend on policies, standards, implementation specifications, and certification criteria to achieve progress on the things that are laid out for us in the 21st Century Cures Act. That would be achieving a health IT infrastructure that allows for the electronic access, exchange, and use of health information, for the promotion and protection of privacy and security of health information in health IT, for the facilitation of secure access by an individual to the individual's protected health information, and any other target areas that we identify as being appropriate for consideration. Next slide, please. The HITECH policy framework expects us to include recommendations to the national coordinator. They can adapt as they relate to these target areas, which can include the Trusted Exchange Framework. We'll be hearing more from that task force today. The United States Core Data for Interoperability. We'll also hear a report from that task force. Standard use cases and health IT interoperability and certification enhancements proposed rule. Next slide, please. And again, this is more of the specific language that lays out the schedule available for our reference. Next slide, please. So we again have four parts here. First, to identify the best mechanism to organize itself to respond to the national coordinator with recommendations within 90 days. We need to cover at a minimum an assessment of policies, standards, implementation specifications, and certification criteria that are currently available. We need to consider where the gaps exist and identify potential organizations that have the capability to address the gaps. We need to create a timeline, which may also account for the National Institute of Standards and Technology Testing. One will be expecting to issue these recommendations to the national coordinator, and we want to be sure we include an opportunity for public comment along the way. Next slide, please. When we respond to the national coordinator, we need to approve a timeline for delivering our recommendations, and we need to establish a task force to conduct analysis, solicit input, and so forth. And next slide, please. In collaboration with NIST annually and with public input, we will review and publish priorities for the use of health IT standards and implementation specifications to support the priorities. Next slide, please. And finally, we will recommend to the national coordinator for the purposes of adoption, standards, implementation specifications, and certification criteria in an order of priority for development, harmonization, and recognition of standards, specifications, and certification criteria. This could include things like recommended standards, architectures, software schemes for access to electronic, individually identifiable health information across various systems that include user vetting, authentication, privilege management, and access control. The next slide, please. We also have the work of an annual progress report to Congress. We submit that to the HHS Secretary and Congress, discussing the work that we've done as the HITACH, with an assessment of the infrastructure, including the extent to which electronic health information is appropriately and readily available to enhance access, exchange, and use of information, the extent to which advancements have been achieved. We will give an analysis of existing gaps in policies and resources for furthering interoperability. We'll make recommendations for addressing the gaps that we've identified, and we'll also address anything else that HITACH and ONC deem appropriate. Next slide, please. So our draft timeline is fairly aggressive, at least initially. For the first quarter of the year, we have the policy schedule and the framework. We've also gotten a start on the Trusted Exchange Framework Task Force and the US CDI Task Force. As we move into spring, we will get to ONC's proposed rule covering the cures implementation. Through the summer, we'll work on standards use cases. And then in the fall, we will move to preparing the annual report. If I could have the next slide, please. And this is kind of a visual representation of how that work proceeds, showing that we're early on with the Trusted Exchange Framework and the US CDI glide path, and then moving into the proposed rule, the use cases, and the report later on in the year. So the next slide, please. Okay, we're not quite at the break yet. So at this point, having presented the schedule, it's now our time to talk about the policy framework and have some discussion about that before we head into the break. So I think if you could all put up your hands with questions or comments, we can move to that phase.
Okay. This is Laura from ONC. Are there any points of clarity that we need to address amongst the committee?
I did a pretty fast run through on that because I wanted to leave as much time as possible for discussion, but please don't feel that that was an effort just to run it past you. This is our opportunity to really work through that and be sure we're all on the same page.
Yes, and we went back to the broader policy framework language from the Cures Act, so we can come back to a particular slide if maybe.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, I guess I'm curious, what precisely is the deliverable of our committee on this policy framework? What exactly are we expected to provide here?
So this is Anthony. I can jump in, Carolyn, if it's helpful.
Go for it.
So the in Cures Act, there's a requirement that the policy framework be developed by, or sent to the national coordinator by the committee. And the chairs, I think you guys have a hard copy of it, the Word document version of it as well. Once the committee has reviewed kind of what Carolyn has walked through, then it would be the opportunity for you to vote on that policy framework. That then comes to ONC as a recommendation, and that's part of what we consider in our ongoing work. The draft that Carolyn and Robert put together very much aligns with the priority target areas that are identified by CURES and also allows for some growth in that area as we proceed throughout the year. Carolyn, did I capture that well? Or?
No, I think that was great. Thank you.
Okay. Sure.
Go ahead, Cheryl.
Yes, I have one question. As I review the trusted framework, one of the things that comes to mind is the fact that there may need to be some sort of strongly worded or policy related to mandated participation for some players in the landscape. Is that within the realm of policies that we could recommend?
So I think that is referencing the trust exchange framework, which is under consideration by the task force. So yes,
yes.
Absolutely. The committee can recommend whatever they think is appropriate for ONC to consider as part of that process. It would be the same thing for any charge that we present to the committee, whether it's on USCDI or whether it's on the trust exchange framework. Once we present the charge, the committee can recommend back to us whatever they think would be most helpful in that space.
Thank you.
This is Carolyn. I don't see any other hands. Are there other questions or comments related to the framework or the schedule?
And Carolyn, this is Lauren. Just a reminder to the committee that in the second batch of materials that you received, it is the full Word versions that Elise mentioned of both the policy framework and schedule.
Yes, that's right. Well, it looks like we don't have further discussion or questions at this point. Lauren, do you want to advance the break? Or should we do one of the task force discussions first? What do you think?
Well, I think we just have to get the committee's consensus on the policy framework first.
Okay. So we have just looked at the policy framework and schedule, and I'm wondering if we're ready to move for a vote. Is there a motion to approve it?
Motion.
And is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Do a voice vote to approve the policy framework and schedule. Please say aye.
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 And for those who don't wish to approve the policy framework and schedule, please say nay. Okay, it sounds like we're all set with an approval on that, Lauren.
Great, thank you, Carolyn. So I have this, we're about 15 minutes ahead of schedule, so we can give folks a little bit longer break time and resume at 11:45, or we can kind of come back a little bit earlier at 11:30. Any preference?
Can we come back earlier?
Earlier would be the
earlier, yes.
Earlier.
All right, so we'll break now to 11:14 Eastern Time. We'll come back in exactly 15 minutes. Okay, operator, do we have the lines open again? Okay, so it looks like we are back. Welcome, everyone. I will turn it over to Carolyn at this point to move us into our next section of the agenda.
Great, thank you, Lauren. We are now going to move into the part of the meeting where we have our task force discussions. Denise Webb and Arian Malik will be starting first with the Trusted Exchange Framework. Go ahead.
Good morning. This is Denise Webb. If we could have the next slide, please. I'm going to go over our charge, and then Arian's going to go over our work plan. So just to remind all of you what our charge is from the ONC, we are going to, as a task force, develop and advance recommendations on Part A and Part B of the draft TEF so that we can inform the final TEF and common agreement that ONC will be publishing. So for our detailed charge, we need to make specific recommendations around the language that's included in Part B, which specifies the minimum required terms and conditions for trusted exchange. Our work is broken up into four areas. The first area is around the recognized coordinating entity and making recommendations on eligibility requirements. The ONC is in the process right now of developing the cooperative agreement and would like recommendations to inform that development. The second area is around definition and requirements of qualified HINs, and we are being asked to make recommendations to further clarify eligibility requirements for the qualified HINs as outlined in Part B of the TEF. The third area is around permitted uses and disclosures. ONC is seeking feedback on how we might enhance or how they might enhance or clarify the six permitted purposes and three use cases that are identified in Part B of the TEF. And then finally, the task force is going to make specific recommendations around privacy and security and any particular standards and technical requirements that the ONC should specify for identity proofing and authentication, particularly for individuals. So that is our charge, and Arian will now go over our work plan, our very aggressive work plan.
Carol, I don't know if, or Denise, if we wanted to just pause to review the task force membership. That's the next.
Oh, yes, I forgot that slide was in there. Okay, so this is our team, our task force members, with Arian and I co-chairing. And I won't read this to all of you, but we do have a representative group, which includes committee members and public members across the spectrum of stakeholders. And I thank all of the folks who volunteered to help with this. We can go to the next slide. And now I think Arian is up, if he's on. Do we have Arian?
All right, we're just confirming that his audio is still connected.
If for some reason we lost him, I can go over this.
Okay, why don't we do that, Denise?
Okay. As I mentioned, we have a very aggressive schedule. We, between now and March 21st, when this committee convenes again, we are meeting just about twice a week. We had our first meeting yesterday, and really that was an introductory meeting, and Zoe, who's assisting us, reviewed the Trusted Exchange Framework and our project plan. And our project plan is broken up around the four specific areas that we are charged with providing recommendations to our committee and then on to the national coordinator. So on Friday this week, we will be working on the eligibility requirements for the recognized coordinating entity. And then next Monday, we'll be looking at the QHIN definition and eligibility requirements, followed by a Friday meeting on permitted uses and disclosures. And then the week of the 5th, that's when we are actually going to begin drafting recommendations, and I know it's not noted here, but on the 5th, we will be covering the privacy and security area. And so we will spend that week of the 5th working through that drafting and a review of the draft recommendations, and we expect to finalize those recommendations the next week and be able to advance our final recommendations to the full committee for review on the 19th and then deliberate on the 21st. Any questions?
This is Clement Donald. You guys still got a chance for questions?
Yes, we are. This is Carolyn. It looks like Stephen Lane is at the top of the queue.
Oh, okay. I don't know if my hand's up or down.
That's fine. Clem can go ahead.
Well, I just wondered whether this was this. I'm assuming this isn't starting from whole cloth. This is in response to the proposed approach to all this for the network, or no? Is this starting out kind of doing its own thing? There was a published proposed for the big network security privacy stuff, I thought.
No, actually we are taking what is spelled out in the Trusted Exchange Framework in the draft, and we are starting from that and addressing specific questions that need further clarification
where
the looking for recommendations. We are also asking our task force members to go back and look at the actual legislation, because that can really inform the discussion as well. Oftentimes, when we look at documents that come out, there's the question is, why are we doing this or that? And sometimes it's the law that dictates what needs to be done. So we're also having our task force members look at the original language that's in the 21st Century Cures Act.
Well, thank you. That's helpful, because it seems more doable then.
Absolutely. There's no way we could start this from a whiteboard, an empty whiteboard.
Okay, and Stephen, why don't you go ahead now?
Great, thanks. I've had the opportunity to participate with a number of groups that have reviewed the draft Trusted Exchange Framework and prepared and submitted comments. I've had a chance to read a number of those comments. And in more than one of those instances, there was a request for another round of public comments, that there are people who felt that sufficient changes and modifications were warranted, that it would be appropriate to see a second draft and another review. I'm just curious whether that's something that might yet occur. Has that been considered or discussed, or does the legislation really preclude that opportunity?
Hi, this is Genevieve. I'll just jump in on an answer on that, Stephen. Apologies. Again, my voice is still not great, but we are planning to do comment once we get to the common agreement. So there won't be another round of comments as we're drafting the final trust exchange framework, but towards the end of this year, once we've worked with the RCE to develop the full common agreement, which would be done with ongoing stakeholder input, we would do another round of comments later on. So that's the plan as it stands right now.
Thanks.
By the way, Arian's here, and apologies for missing the start of the session.
We got you covered.
Thank you.
I don't see other hands up in the query list. If anyone has a question, please use the functionality to raise your hand so we'll know you have an interest.
Arian, I don't know if you wanted to add anything in terms of our task force work?
Just the recognition that this is going to be incredibly fast-paced. Huge appreciation for the task force members, and maybe just an acknowledgement that we started basically because of the timing of HITECH and the timing of the TEF. We started this work probably a month later than we ordinarily would have in a more coordinated task force approach. So we're just going to have to work really, really hard to get high-quality recommendations to this committee and ultimately to the national coordinator.
Okay. Last opportunity for other questions or discussions by the committee members. Well, Denise and Arian, it sounds like everyone is on board with the task force plan, and we all wish you well as we sail forward with this.
Thank you indeed.
Thank you.
So it looks like since there is no more discussion on the Trusted Exchange Framework Task Force, we will move to the report from the U.S. Core Data Interoperability Task Force. I'll bring forward Christina Carabello and Terry O'Malley, our task force co-chairs.
Great. Thanks, Carolyn. This is Christina. Terry and I are actually really, really excited to get started on this work and create a foundation and framework looking at how we can make data more exciting for a larger group of stakeholders. So looking at what our charge is with the U.S. Core Data for Interoperability, or USCDI, our overarching goal is to review and provide feedback on the USCDI structure and process. We have four specific charges that we will need to provide recommendations on. The first is mechanisms and approaches to receive stakeholder feedback regarding data class priorities. The second is the proposed categories to which data classes would be promoted and objective characteristics for promotion. Third is how the USCDI would be expanded and by how much. And fourth, any factors associated with the frequency with which it would be published. Our task is really to lay this foundation and framework for the future. As we shift interoperability from the dialogue occurring around our traditional use cases, which have historically focused on hospitals, providers, and EHRs, our goal is to create this framework where we get support from the broader ecosystem of stakeholders. So that kind of brings us to our next slide. We thought it was really important to define, first of all, who this broader ecosystem is. If you look at the USCDI, ONC has put in some variety of use cases and target populations that they've kind of identified. These include behavioral health, long-term and post-acute care, individual access, public health, emergency medical services, pediatrics, social determinants of health, transitions of care, provider directory services, and clinical quality measures. This is kind of a starting point that we hope to build a foundation to generate even more excitement about the work being done in the USCDI and get even more stakeholders to identify more use cases so that we can start creating more data sets to support that broader ecosystem. The scope of our charge is really, again, to focus on this process and framework. The draft UC US, that's a tongue twister, I keep messing it up, USCDI version 1 started by reflecting The data classes referenced in the 2015 edition, Common Clinical Data Set, adding clinical notes and provenance, and we're looking again to continue to lay the foundation to build on how we prioritize the next group for the next version. So moving on to our next slide, Terry is going to go ahead and go over our membership and our work plan.
Great. Thanks, Christina. And sort of consistent with the vision of adding different stakeholders to the list, we try to form this committee using two criteria. One is any willing high-tech member we were delighted to have joined. So thank you all for stepping forward. This is really important. And then we tried to add public members who represent either previously underrepresented sectors with tremendous interest in interoperability, or particular perspectives from groups such as nursing, which as opposed to medical. We have a lot of MDs on our committee and not too many nurses. And then sort of down the list. So our intent was to make this as broadly inclusive as we could so that we will come up with this, a method that prioritizes data classes to represent the broadest stakeholder population that we can. So go ahead, the next slide, please. So fortunately, we can just meander, whereas the TEFCA has to sprint. So we're going to, in the course of the next 8 weeks, only meet once weekly. And on the March 21st highlighted, we will present some draft recommendations to the HITAC on our next call. And then over the 4 weeks that follow that, we will prepare a draft set of final recommendations for consideration. And go ahead to the next slide, please. And I think that's it, so we'll open it to questions.
Hi, this is Ken Kamoto. Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed.
Excellent. Just wanted to get a sense of whether the specifics within a data class can be a part of our charge and sort of consideration. So, for example, we might, for example, medications might already be in the core data set, but in our implementations using our EHR systems and other EHR systems and looking at it, there are still some issues with not being able to really achieve all the interoperability we want. So example might be that, you know, the route of a medication is left up to whatever the vendor decides they want to use because it's not otherwise specified in the specifications and the standards. Could you comment on how we want to approach that at all, or do we basically say that, you know, if we identify then the medications are already part of the spec of what's a core data, then we just move on and not worry about whether it is in fact already interoperable?
Sure. I know Christina and I both have thoughts about that. So Christina, would you like to lead off, or shall I?
Go ahead.
Okay. Well, that's a critical issue. And on the one hand, you know, data is going to have to be granular enough and specified sufficiently so that it can actually be interoperably exchanged. On the other hand, I think our committee charge, instead of being down in the weeds about the particular data elements that we're going to be looking at underneath the particular data classes, we're sort of operating initially at a much higher level, and that's to see if we can't develop a process that is transparent and inclusive and reliable and understandable that allows data classes to be proposed and then have a similar, reliable, clear, public, transparent process to advance them. So I think that's the charge of our committee, rather than getting down to the specific data elements, which is a critical piece, but I think our committee is not going to do that. Is that, Christina, is that your understanding?
Yes, we would discuss that actually quite a bit, and we just want to make sure that we are creating that a framework. As Terry was saying, we'll look at some of the proposed data elements more as examples to apply them to the framework, but not diving into the weeds of the actual data sets. But I think bringing up the dialogue on...
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. And certainly in like 8 weeks, we're not going to solve interoperability, of course, but maybe it's just, maybe it's not during this sprint, whatnot, but maybe it's outside of the scope of what we do these next 8 weeks, et cetera. But I do think having a strategy, at least maybe on ONC side, of how we're going to actually get interoperability in these items would be good, because talking to some major vendors, you know, for example, last year's Healthcare Services Platform Consortium Implementers Forum, I think there was general consensus that we're probably like at, for the things that have been defined, maybe around 85% interoperable, which is great. It's certainly better than we've had before. It would just be good to have a strategy for how we're going to, you know, get closer to 100.
Yeah, and if I can comment on that, because, I mean, this really is a critical point, and it also bears on how we prioritize data classes going forward. Now, so is it that 85% that have mature standards and have granularity sufficient to support interoperability? Now, do we push them to the front of the queue because they're ready to launch, or do we need to make room in this process for data classes that are relatively underrepresented across the continuum of care? So that's one of the conundrums we're facing.
Agreed. I agree with the general direction, and just I think we're all saying that yes, we need to deal with both. It's just a matter of prioritization. I agree with all that, and maybe that's part of the discussion we'll have after we meet the initial charge of what are the new data classes. You know, how do we deal with the data classes we've already set our priorities?
Yeah, and to that, when we're trying to get that to that 100%, and you're talking about part of this is so that we can clearly see where the gaps are as well. So, for example, looking at, we've discussed these, the different use cases, and we've possibly, as a tangible example, putting on the side of the chart that exists, maybe we add something like the use cases so we can see what's being supported and what's not being supported. So that has been in part of our discussion, is to come out of this with a much more clear understanding of what's needed. So it'll be easy to have a kind of a next steps as well.
Maybe along those lines, it'd be nice if we could do something voluntary. For example, maybe Sasha could facilitate through the EHR Association of, you know, if we have a standard, et cetera, I'm imagining like a grid that's voluntarily reported of how each vendor supports the standards, or, you know, whether they in fact do support the U.S. core fire profiles, et cetera. Because right now I think a lot of that's, you know, not available for consumption to say, hey, you know, what do actually the vendors support with regard to the, you know, the standards that are specified beyond, you know, the things like fire, how far do they go beyond it, that kind of thing. I think that would be quite useful.
This is Cynthia Fisher. If you also look from a patient and physician perspective on economic impact and time impact in care, adding films and labs and pharmacy results, which are already in storage networks, shared interstate, would make a huge financial impact across the board, both in hard dollars and soft dollars. So I just encourage that as we look at this opportunity, even setting guidelines for interstate ease of sharing would be
market impact.
This is Stephen Lane. Cynthia, I agree that I think looking at the value proposition related to each of the data types is going to be an important dimension for the work group to consider. The other thing that I would add, and echoing what Ken said, is this, the idea of a grid and looking at the various vendors, what they, you know, which standards they embrace, but digging down deeper into really how they are constraining the standards, how they're implementing it, and really thinking about how this is going to be tested, because we can, what we find in the wild is that vendors might say they're embracing the same standard, but then when we actually try to do the exchange, it doesn't work as well as we'd like. So I think there are opportunities to dig deep. The question I think for us is, what is the role of this work group or task force compared to other groups? And I think that that's going to be one of our biggest challenges here, is assuring that we're fully aware of the other work that's going on within HL7, work that's being done by the Sequoia Project, by other groups in this space, so that we can align with and support that effort and not duplicate it.
This is Clem. I don't know what the list of hands up. I don't want to jump in, but I can't see who's on the list.
Yes, this is Carolyn. I was just about to hop in and kind of ask the committee respectfully that we go with the hands raised process. We are running quite a bit ahead on our schedule, so I think we'll have plenty of time for all the discussion we want to have, but it is helpful to keep it a little more orderly. Clem, why don't you go ahead, because you're at the top of the list and you had started in.
Okay, so there's a couple points I'd like to make. Firstly, there's this issue of, we think we're done with some of it. It sounds like, you know, providers are getting all their data and no one else is. I don't think providers are either, except if they're inside of one system. I don't hear it from practitioners that it's easy to connect up and get labs or x-rays or anything from outside. So I don't think we should think of them as advanced or privileged unless others disagree. They have a long way to go too. Second thing is, if we could send it anywhere, we can send it everywhere. So that is, we shouldn't have to worry about if we're sending it to an office practice or a home health care or whatever. Right now, we just don't have good ways to send it, get it out of the sources. So I'd like to keep an emphasis on getting it out. And then thirdly, I really support, I think we got to talk about some specifics. I've been at too many committees that talk about processes and stuff, and it never changes anything. People don't know whether they like it or don't like it until they see specifics. So I hope the committee can talk about specific data elements or data content.
Thanks, Clem. Leslie Leonard, please bring your comment forward.
Yes, I just wanted to ask what the plan was for inclusion of the public health perspective in these data elements, and that rapid exchange of data for public health purposes is really critical for a response to public health emergencies and pandemics and such.
Yeah, this is Terry. Another high priority stakeholder, and I think what's apparent from the last several comments is that there's a wide spectrum of views and priorities on what data and data classes would significantly advance the work in each of these sort of sectors. I think that's part of the challenge of the committee, is to, first of all, get the input of the stakeholders that we think are critical, and perhaps the committee could comment on sort of nominations of stakeholders who haven't traditionally been thought of within the under the umbrella of interoperability to help guide this. But having located and identified the stakeholders, then I think we're in a position to begin to understand how they prioritize their data needs, and then sort of figure out a priority mechanism to advance those data classes using whatever criteria we come up with to push them forward. And then I think is the time we dive into the data class and look at the specifics. But again, that won't happen in this 8 weeks. But I can't remember whose point it was, but it really needs to happen over time. Tina? Ted?
Okay, let's take the next question from Arian.
Hey, thank you for the presentation and for the thoughtful work plan. I would encourage the group. Stephen Lane already mentioned a number of these coordinating organizations. I'd also add the Argonaut Project to the list. They've been very successful at gaining adoption for API-based app workflows. And so these kinds of coordinating organizations that include providers as well as HIT developers are useful ways to make sure that the USCDI roadmap has a place to go. I think, as a number of people have mentioned, the history of healthcare and interoperability in healthcare is that there's a gap between standards creation and testing adoption and deployment, or I guess testing, deployment, and adoption. And finally, I would urge the committee to go back and look at a report that Stan Huff and I wrote from a task force looking at standards and interoperability and making recommendations to ONC about how to improve standards and interoperability that really called for that level of testing in the wild and careful adoption, coordinated adoption of standards to make sure that not only are the standards developed, but again, that they're tested and adopted in the wild. So again, just a call out to look at the organizations that are helping to convene that process and make sure that we have a thoughtful roadmap that contemplates not just the data classes, but also standards development, testing, rollout, and adoption. Thank you.
And this is Christina, and just to chime in on answering that, some of the original questions on involving the standards bodies, one of the things that Terry and I have discussed is using the USCDI to kind of generate conversation and get some of these different needs and gaps in data classes on the radar of the standards body. So I think working in tandem with the different groups that are kind of leading the charge in development of standards will be a really important part of building this foundation that we're working on with the USCDI.
Great. Thanks, Christina. Let's go to Sasha Termat.
Hello, this is Sasha. I just wanted to thank Ken and Stephen for their earlier comment about the possibility of the EHR Association providing some additional data about data class adoption, which is a great idea, and I'll take that back to them. The EHRA has also recently been working on our first edition of our interoperability survey of our membership, where for the first time we're collecting statistics from all of our members on the actual use of standards, transaction counts, and so forth for different standards that are available for certain use cases. And we plan to then collect that every 6 months so that we would be able to use that as an ongoing metric to see which standards are being seen increasing adoption, decreasing adoption, where folks are seeing the most value there. And I hope that that data source would prove useful to some of these endeavors as well.
Okay, and let's go back to Ken.
Great. Thanks. As we discuss this, I think a lot of times we talk about what we expect EHR systems to do or health IT systems to do, and I think as I think about this, I think we also need to set some expectations of what healthcare system stakeholders need to do. And as a specific example, I think it's completely appropriate to say, for example, asking EHR vendors when they're making laboratories to be available to have a mechanism for that to be mapped to blank codes to identify what lab you're talking about. But I think I wouldn't expect the EHR vendor to be the one who actually does all the mapping to make sure the internal lab codes, et cetera, get mapped to the right labs. Same thing for other observations or, say, procedures. So, again, I think the EHR systems need to make, and I think they are making available tools to make that happen, but the actual mapping, I think, needs to happen at the healthcare system level because, you know, you need to actually be looking at the examples, know your local ordering patterns, et cetera. I think, you know, in that regard, I think it's important for probably this committee, maybe others, to define and prioritize, you know, for example, for labs, instead of saying, you know, just map all of your 4,000 labs to LINC codes, to say, you know, these are the ones that we think as a common expectation should be mapped so that, for example, under TESCA, if you search out for someone's hemoglobin A1C level or someone's glucose level or, you know, liver enzyme levels, that you are, in fact, getting those right labs back rather than getting something that's mismapped or not mapped, which I think, as a practical matter, is what happens. So just want to bring into this forum the notion that, you know, we can't just put all the expectation on EHR vendors. We have to have some expectations of what healthcare organizations will be doing to make the mappings correct for the things that we, as a community, feel should be mapped and should be interoperable.
Thanks, Ken. Let's go to Stephen Lane.
Yeah, I just wanted to echo, Ken, what you said. The idea that not only is there an opportunity for us to prioritize data classes or types, as we've called them, but also within those classes, prioritizing the data elements. And you called out labs, which is an effort that our organization is in the midst of right now. And I think we, like most people, find that the lab that floats to the top of the list is the A1C because it's so critical in terms of providing coordinated care to patients with diabetes. But as you say, the industry isn't necessarily ready to just map all the, as you said, 4,000 lab elements. There's probably many more than that when you get down to it. So if we can think about providing some prioritization or at least developing a mechanism to provide prioritization within the data classes, I think that may be really valuable.
Thanks, Steve. Let's go back to Clem.
So I support all the things that everybody said, especially what Ken said. But I'd like to come back. One other party we have to think about when people say they want more data, I think we should distinguish data that they then would expect labor to be invested in by care providers to enter it because it doesn't exist versus data that's sitting in some computer electronically but just isn't well standardized. I mean, there's an infinite desire for more data, but we have to realize that providers, nurses, and physicians don't have an infinite amount of time anymore, right? Very little time. So just keep that distinction in mind when we think about it. And then one other thing about the lab data, there is an evolution coming that the instrument vendors are providing a mapping from their internal test codes to LINC codes. At least a couple of them have it on their websites already, which should make it a lot easier for labs and institutions to get the right LINC code mapped to a lab test. And if the instrument vendors are the ones who know best, you know, what the codes, what the things really are. Thank you.
Thanks, Clem. Let's head to Tina Esposito, please.
Thank you very much. I think the comments are all good, and I think it's very easy to get and want to go into the weeds in terms of what data elements, but I appreciate the comments in ensuring that the framework and the process is correct. And so the one comment I would have is as we think about the use cases that will be defined, I think it's really important to ensure that it's a broad spectrum of use cases. I know we said two or three, but within those handful, ensuring that we're considering all stakeholders. I was happy to hear providers beyond just physicians. I think physicians obviously are key, but other clinicians are incredibly important, patients, healthcare systems, vendors, and then also as we think about use cases, sort of another element to that is certainly point-to-point care, of course, in a clinician's or physician's office, but echoing or sort of following up on the comments earlier around uses like the CDC, analytics and things like that. So I would say I think the detail will come, and it will be the right detail if we identify the right use cases to think through that.
Thanks, Tina. So it looks like the queue is empty. Does anyone on the committee have another additional comment or question? Please raise your hand. Okay, recognizing Terry O'Malley.
So thank you very much for all these comments. They're incredibly helpful, and we will do our best to reconcile the comments. I guess I have a question for the committee as a whole, and that is, could we give some thought to either use cases or stakeholders or broad domains of data that appear to fall outside of the current domains and stakeholders listed in the draft USCDI? I know we've sort of done that a little bit this morning, but I'm asking if we could get sort of an explicit response to places where this process should go, or conversely, where this process shouldn't go. It's really a scoping issue. Thanks.
Just to clarify, is that a comment for Lauren and Elise? A question or?
That's a question for the entire committee.
Okay.
Whoever wants to jump in.
Going on the list, I'm sorry, did I cut someone off?
No, go ahead.
Okay. It looks like Clem is up again for the next comment.
Well, it's kind of along the same lines about what we can talk about. I'd like to know where it was written that we can only talk about certain things. That is, does this come out of the law, or is this, because I had the impression that we didn't have to take the whole 6 weeks just to think about high-level thoughts, but if we could make bigger progress, we could do it. So is it forbidden? So back to the question, what we should talk about, I think I can sense that the committee is pulling at the harnesses trying to talk about specifics, but it's maybe forbidden by some higher authority. And so I'd like to know who the authority is.
So this is Lauren from ONT. I can speak to, you know, the 21st Century Cures Act kind of lays out what the high tech, you know, absolutely must do. I think that everything else that the committee brings forward that they want to consider discussing or raising as an issue, we will discuss that with the committee chairs. Relative to the two task forces, we will also want to take that up with Genevieve Morris and Steve Posnack, who's the internal leadership regarding the two task force, and see if there's anything else that is within scope or outside scope that we should consider, as well as the task force chairs.
Well, I mean, specifically, sort of at the first meeting, it was discussed, this is what the existing set of classes are, and here's two additional possible suggestions. And then from this discussion today, it sounds like we shouldn't talk about that, about getting to which items should be in priority. Or I could certainly buy getting a process, but if we, some of these things are, you know, we're chomping at the bit on, and why it seems like we should be able to discuss them too.
This is Genevieve. I'll just jump in there. I think the goal, Clem, is that the process comes first, and once that's in place, then the process itself could be used for the committee to discuss the actual data classes themselves. I think the concern that we have, obviously, as ONC, is that the USCDI version 1 is, you know, our kind of best guess. What's currently in the Canada and emerging are our best guesses based on what we've heard from stakeholders over the last 2 to 3 years. But I think without a process to actually prioritize we're just going to end up in sort of a cycle where we keep talking about needing more data, but don't actually ever add more data because we can never figure out what to work on next. So I think we're totally open to you all talking about the specific data classes once that process is actually in place. And then, you know, we would want you guys to test the process and actually figure out how we're going to use it to prioritize.
So we should probably get the process done quickly so we can do other stuff.
It is a motivation, I guess.
Thanks, Clem and Genevieve. We appreciate that clarification for the committee. Let's go to Ken now for another comment.
Great. So my recommendation on where to go next, I think as much as I like structured data, I think the first part is just making sure anything human readable that folks want are there. So I think the movement into things like notes is amazing and great. I think once we do that and we start focusing on the structured data, my recommendation would be to focus on the core and avoid getting too much into scope creep. I think before we really go down, well, so once we have the human readable content, we're getting into the structured data. I think it's better to harden up what we have already and to make sure that is truly interoperable before we say, hey, let's look for additional things to add into the structured data we want to share. Because, you know, we all have limited bandwidth, and if we do too much scope, my guess is we'll get less done. So that would just be a recommendation that, you know, we don't really need to keep adding a lot more structured data before we have the existing structured data in good shape.
And we have one last comment from Clem. Are you on mute, Clem? We can't hear you.
Yes, I am on mute. As part of non-structured or narrative text, I hope he's including radiology reports because they cost twice as much as lab tests do for the nation. And they're really, really important for clinical care and for patients to have to know what they say. I pitch that a lot, and I'm not a radiologist.
Go ahead, Terry.
And thanks for the last two comments, Ken and Clem. It's a reminder that machine-readable data is only readable by people with machines. And meaningful use and high tech only got so far across the healthcare spectrum. And so the emphasis on text is probably a really good one if we're trying to engage a much broader group of clinical actors. So thank you for those two comments.
Seeing that we have no more comments and raised hands in the queue, I will thank you, Christina and Terry, for giving us this presentation and engaging in the discussion. Lauren, are we ready to go to public comments?
Yes, I believe so. Okay, we're now at the public comment portion of the agenda. Operator, can you please open the line for public comment?
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate that your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question at this time. We'll hold for one moment to see if there are any questions. Again, that is star 1. And it seems we have no questions at the phone at this time.
Okay, I'm sorry. You said there were no comments at this time?
Correct. There are no questions over the phone at this time.
Okay. Maybe we'll give it just one more minute to see if we have any other comments. Then we move to adjourn. Carolyn, did you have any other closing remarks while we wait for additional comments?
It's been great to see the energetic participation and discussion today. We had some really excellent presentations that will orient us for the work we'll be undertaking over the next few months. And I'm looking forward to seeing what we have to discuss in March.
Great. Thank you, Carolyn. And operator, any other comments, public comments?
None at this time.
Okay. Thank you. So before we adjourn, just a couple of reminders. So the schedule for all of the task force meetings can be found on our website, healthit.gov. For those committee members who are just interested in maybe kind of checking in to see what the other task force is doing, you're welcome to listen in on those as well. And then as a reminder for the full HITECH, our next meeting is March 21st. That will be virtual as well. In the meantime, we will send out the minutes from this meeting in the next several days to the committee. And with that, we will adjourn. Thank you all for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren.
All right, thank you.